The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good Tuesday morning, and welcome to another edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station, WTJX-FM 93.1, with yours truly, Neville James. Today is the 12th of March. I thought it was March 1st the other day. And we home in. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be the middle of March by this weekend. And then we start the second half on Sunday. You know what I'm saying? So, time flying. And you know what Kobe Bryant said, right? Everybody believe that they got time. And they don't control time. You know what I'm saying? So, time humming. Had a great discussion yesterday. Talking about education here in the territory. And specifically history. And the need for it to be... even more so mandated. I was talking with Jeffrey Moorhead last night, and Jeffrey said that the law actually mandates that any class in the Virgin Islands, right? Any class under the regulatory authority, the Department of Education, or the government, right? They got to teach VA history. So, hold on there. Phone them low this morning. Got to shut it down, right? He said even a hairstylist class, that's that's how broad the application is, and the language is shall. And he said that was about Brian, signing a double for Brian. Legislation from back in the day, but it just ain't really being enforced. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, talking with the boys, you know, my mentors and colleagues, because they could be both. The one thing that was from yesterday's discussion that really resonated was Ms. Molinar's position, whereas we got so many VI history books, right? But the curriculum ain't really tight enough, you know? No, you know, Santa Francis, with the Senate President, you know, texted me and informed me that they're actually working on something to be even more history-centric. So hopefully that works out. But, you know, like the Roger Hill reference, you know, where he actually wrote a history book for fourth graders. There's nothing wrong with starting at that lower age, you know, because everybody focuses on high school. But, you know, if you can get certain things ingrained, you know, in the brain at an early age, it'll become just, like a refresher course. As you continue to, you know, learn, and you're going up in grades, you get from elementary school, you get to junior high school, and then on to high school, you know. And like I said, you know, the year I went to Central High School, right, that infamous 1977-78 school year, and Caribbean history, you know, was taught, you know. We were going to split session then, right? School from 12:30 to 5:30, and Kirby, which was in ninth grade history class, but for the most part they teach world history in ninth grade, you know, government in 10th grade, and U.S. history in 11th grade. Me personally, I think a good age for history, because you know when you're doing in elementary school, it's in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. You know what I'm saying? There is a chuck that does, your chuck, that's another local term to chuck, right? There is a chuck that does at an early age and, you know, all that stuff. And then eventually people started questioning really the, you know, the truth of that. But, actual facts, you know. But in the Virgin Islands, right, before you get to that 9, 10, 11, 12th grade, I believe 7th and 8th grade is a good time, right, for VI history. I really do. You know, and, you know, we got Malik Sekou coming on Thursday. And not in this discussion on Thursday, but in the second one we're going to have. And it's scheduled for the 28th, but we might actually push that to the 26th. You know, we have enough history, right, that a curriculum could be put in place and it could cover the entire school year. Because remember now, it's one thing to have history, but then you have to have, you know, coursework, right, that allow for, you know, for quizzes, for exams and all that stuff. That's the beauty of a curriculum, right? And, you know, the textbook, you would want a full year length textbook, because you don't really want multiple textbooks for a student, right? Now, I don't know how, you know, they break things down if you're dealing, because they got this block approach or whatever it is. And, you know, a class might last for a semester long, and then come January, when you come in for the second semester, they might be going a different route. But for us, you know, whatever you had to start the year, that's what it was until the end of the year. But you want, you know, that textbook to have that ability to be, what is it, 1,080, whatever the amount of hours, you know, to make sure that you have enough coursework. So, you know, we know that we have more than enough textbooks. We just need the proper curriculum. You know, the Unbiblical Core, like I mentioned all the time, for Harold Willacks, Clear the Road, the one, you know, the one that I learned about yesterday. it's just amazing, you know, when you look at it. And for us, you know, our history is intertwined nationally, right? On the Hamilton front, the Leidesdorf, you know, the Sustenance Bends, right? The brothers who deal with ITT, the Leidesdorf is actually the first black millionaire, right? And one of the founders of Yerba Buena, which is now modern-day San Francisco. He was born here in the Danish West Indies. I think he's on St. Croix. So since Benzema is from St. Thomas. It's also global, right, with Edward Wilmer Blyden and his impact in Africa, Camille Pizarro, you know, and his impact in Europe as an impressionist. And that's back in the day, you know. I didn't even get to, you know, post-purchase when we start in 1917, the heart of the migration of Virgin Islanders heading up the way, impacting life up there, Marcus Garvey. Now, that's the Caribbean aspect now, right? Because Marcus Garvey is arguably, I'd say, top 10 Caribbean, maybe even top five Caribbean influence here in this part of the world for Pan-Africanism. You know what I'm saying? And his mentor, or one of his mentors, or someone he worked with and looked up to, was Hubert Harrison, a great orator, a lecturer here from St. Croix. The list goes on and on. So that's the Caribbean aspect. I mentioned the national aspect, right? In VI History Month and Black History Month, the Terence Tadman impact as one of the American diplomats. He and Edward Russell and Karl Rowan. So our history is replete. I think that's the appropriate term. Enough for the minds, right? The educators to come together. I ain't really big on this summit thing. Summits, you know, summits have a way of sounding good on paper, and then when they reach, everybody just glad to feel important. You know what I'm saying? So we need to do something, you know, and you know, I suggested this has to be, you know, a high priority area for comprehensive discussion with the Constitutional Convention. You know, I know native rights and all that stuff was a big issue. But, you know, maybe focusing on, you know, how we educate our children and how we make sure that our future leaders aren't just good in certain areas of discipline, like medicine and law and engineering and all that stuff. We want them to also be able, you know, when they're representing us, to talk about the history of the Virgin Islands. You know, you got obligation to know, you know, of where you represent, or to know about of where you represent. You know, so we got a history. You know, we got the volumes. You know, all we need now is a serious commitment to make that happen. So that discussion yesterday, and hey, Ducks, I apologize that you weren't a part of that discussion yesterday. You know, I wish you were. Unfortunately, you know, you were in transition, in transit. So sorry about that, you know, but Rani and Rocky did hold it down, and you are a history major like myself, or a history buff, and that you would have fit in absolutely perfectly with that. I'll tell you that Roger Hill thing really kind of moved me, you know, because I didn't know, you know, that partner were big like that. You know what I'm saying? Tan-tan-tan-tan-tan-tan. Cool like that. I'm smooth like that. In his case, I didn't know Roger Hill was big like that. And then, you know, it was nice when one of my listeners sent a text message to let me know that he had influenced her in school, right? And she actually sent me some text messages this morning as well, you know, and so I want to read one of them, you know, because it really goes to show how the audience, yeah, because you ain't just big, you as a radio host, you don't want to just focus on ratings and think, well, I'm all that, you know, everybody listen to my show. No, I want to know that the, you know, what we're doing is, you know, reaching even further than that. So I got the text message this morning from the same person. Said, good morning. On the topic from yesterday, I taught philosophy in a gifted program for 20 plus years in Virginia. My interest in philosophy began with Roger Hill. The first day of class, he wrote on the board, "Who are you?" It's a question that has been a driving force for my entire life. I loved and respected the man deeply and regret never having the opportunity to tell him how much of an influence he's had on my life and on the life of my children and thousands of students. And she actually lived in the same area, the Mid-Atlantic area. And she said he lived in Maryland. We were so close physically, and I had no idea. Thank you for the show. I don't get to listen every day, but was lucky yesterday to tune in. You know what I'm saying? Which means, right, that if you can't listen live, don't forget the podcast. You know what I'm saying? You know, we make it available for you. You know, if you can't hit it live and also, and don't forget the news feed also, right? With Marcelina Ventura Douglas. I'm putting that plug every afternoon at 5 p.m. You know what I'm saying? So, and then she referenced Les Moore Emmanuel, you know, and his impact on folks, you know. So, you know, the list goes on and on, man. We got more than enough great Virgin Islands. This is Virgin Islands History Month. We got more than enough great Virgin Islands that, you know, we could, you know. And I want to put a focus on Commissioner Wells Hedrington, because her focus now is the new schools. She was playing an instrumental part early on, pre-commissioner position in, you know, procuring what we need for the constructions of the new schools. We got the one here, the new Arthur Richards on St. Croix. We got a couple more on St. Thomas with Charlemagne High School. what have you. So I want to focus on her, but hopefully someone in the department, you know, could hear us, and you know, maybe it could be a joint thing with the superintendent, you know, Jurgen and Herman. So, you know, I'm a history major, so this is near and dear for me. But I'm really about education, you know, and the library, because Wallace Williams was sending me text messages yesterday as well. And, you know, maybe this should all be a part of a comprehensive approach to get our young people, you know, back in the library, back with a greater appreciation for history. Of course, the Virgin Islands history is lovely, but I, you know, just history in general is what, you know, is what I'm about. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully we go, you know, have some kind of impact on how people go about making this of greater importance going forward as well. So just wanted to, you know, dovetail on yesterday's great show and let you know that I wanted to touch on that a little bit. Now, last night, you know, I was watching TV after I got home, and I, you know, the ATP tour, right, and the women's as well, they're out in Indian Wells, which is one of the big tournaments that's not a Grand Slam, right? It's a 1,000 tournament, and Rocky Padna got knocked out. Right, a 20-year-old player who's ranked, I believe, number 123 or something like that, 100 over it is, beat Rocky's goat, Novak Djokovic. Right, but I go get Rocky credit. Rocky didn't wait for us to tease him. You know, he was first to send us a text message to let us know that the goat wasn't goat like last night. So I want Rocky and his friend. My friend who liked to text me about the great Novak Djokovic. Time waits for no man. Father time is undefeated. Okay? And the young player who took him out, I believe his name is Nardi. He's from Italy. And it was a good match. You know, good three-set match. And yeah, Luca Nardi is his name. And 123 in the rankings. 6-4, 3-6, 6-3 in 2 hours and 20 minutes. And Rocky, man, be careful. This might be the year. You know what I'm saying? You know, Nadal done broken down already. He's struggling to get on the court and be competitive. And you know, the younger players, be careful now. This might be... Because, you know, Andy Murray trying his best, but he's doing the most. So just letting you know, me and Ducks and Ronnie got to accept, you know, Federer being gone. So just wanted to warn you, nothing lasts forever in sports. I always remember that. So we'll take a break, doing Henry and Jimmy for some Bush tea. And then we're going to have Afternoon on the Green with Caroline Polidor Simon in the second hour. Be back right after this.
St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
You know a good story when you hear it. Makes you feel, laugh, think. Sometimes you get a little teary. I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday, and each week we bring you stories from around the country and around the world. Stories that help you learn, make you smile, catch you by surprise. Please join us every Saturday for the news you need and the stories you won't forget.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTGX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle. Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here on Analyze This. And my good friend, Dwayne Henry, has joined the chat. Good morning, Counselor. How are you?
Good morning, Senator. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And of course, I'm still basking, you know. Because I'm there with, I'm the precipice, but I'm no longer on the precipice.
Video, I see the video last night, too.
Jeffrey has
a... I'm going to send it to your mentor.
Jeffrey has a career in video.
Yes, he does. He's very good at that.
Afterward, yeah. I thank everybody look out for me. I appreciate that. Hey, check this out. The situation with Donald Trump intensifying on multiple fronts, right?
Yes.
Of course, you know, the first indictment came down like in April last year, early April, the Manhattan case with Alvin Bragg, right? And the judge has scheduled that case is supposed to, how out of that? Go to trial? That's the term? Go to trial?
Yes, going to trial.
Later this month. So now, the term that they're using is Trump trying a Hail Mary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, and claiming that this trial shouldn't go forward until the Supreme Court deals with the immunity case,
right?
His problem, though, right? And Rand Phillips coming into the studio here to talk with us a little bit. His thing is the Hush Money case predated him being in office, right? So explain to us how the argument would apply where he believes that he's immune.
Well, Trump believes that the court in the past has ruled that, you know, in the Clinton case especially, most recently, have ruled that there's some immunity, quite a lot of immunity, while a president is sitting there. And there's been dicta in especially in the Clinton case that said after he leaves office he's subject to civil liability.
Yeah.
The Clinton case dealt with civil liability. However, the Nixon case back in prior to his departure dealt with the possibility of criminal and that was. Because Nixon had tried the same argument.
I think that was the Nixon v. Fitzgerald.
Yes.
I think Fitzgerald had been let go.
That's correct. And
he wanted the ability to sue from a civil perspective, right? From a civil base, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But the argument that Nixon had used was that not only the civil part, but they even went so far as to say that. That he's exempt or immune from criminal, and the court rejected the criminal part back then, saying that
you're saying that when Nixon was arguing the civil case, he was also dealing with the issues of Watergate, right?
Yes, because remember he was being investigated by the special prosecutor.
Yeah,
Yeah. And the special prosecutor had wanted the tapes also.
Archibald Cox.
Archibald Cox.
Yeah.
Who was fired and was replaced by John Sirica.
Yeah, okay.
No, John Sirica was the judge. Archibald Cox was fired and replaced by, help me out. But remember, Archibald Cox was fired.
Yeah.
I forgot his replacement, but
I'm going to pull it up now. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's escaping me, but
That's right. That's right. Nixon did fire Archibald Cox. Yeah.
Yes.
Because clearly he was getting too close.
That was the Saturday Night Massacre. He asked the AG to do it, and the AG said, "I'm not going to do it."
Yeah.
And he fired the AG, and he asked the deputy AG to do it, and the deputy AG said, "I'm not going to do it."
Yeah.
And he fired the deputy AG, and Ted Olson was the Solicitor General, and he asked Ted Olson to do it, and Ted Olson said, "Gladly."
Here we go. Nixon ordered Elliot Richardson, right?
I'm going through the chronology.
Correct. He was the AG to fire Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox. Richardson refused and resigned effective immediately. Nixon then ordered Deputy Attorney William Ruckelshaus to fire Cox. Ruckelshaus refused and also resigned. Nixon then ordered the third most senior official at the Justice Department, Solicitor General Robert Bork.
Bork, right.
Yeah, to fire Cox.
Like Bork was there.
And Bork carried out the dismissal as Nixon asked. Bork stated that he intended to resign afterward, but was persuaded by Richardson and Ruckelshaus to stay on for the good of the Justice Department. And then Leon Jaworski, that's the name that escaped us.
Leon Jaworski.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, Jaworski.
How can you forget the name like that?
I'm telling you, how could I? And Jaworski was a big name in football. Yeah, Ron Jaworski was a quarterback. That's bad. That's bad on my part, right? And he was appointed as a new special prosecutor in February of 73. But the Nixon Fitzgerald case, right? Where he was looking for immunity, right? That was on a civil side, right?
Yes.
Nixon v. Fitzgerald. His problem was when they looked at it, when they looked at immunity in its totality, I think he actually won the Nixon Fitzgerald case, but lost on the from a civil argument. But with a criminal case, he didn't get that, and that's when I think it was Berger, right? It was Berger. Berger was the Supreme Court Justice at the time.
Yes, Warren Burger.
Warren Burger, and that's when they came back with the with the position that no, you are subject to criminal prosecution if you break the law, and that's when everybody tell you, look, now you're gonna step down. The Republicans, his staff, and everybody were telling him to fight, but the Republicans were telling him, man, you gotta step down, cause you're holding us back. And as soon as he stepped down, the first order of business for Gerald Ford was to do what?
Pardon.
Imagine that, yeah.
Because they knew he was going to be prosecuted.
Of course.
The court said, criminal conduct is not part of the necessary functions performed by public officials. So you get immunity for necessary functions, but criminal conduct is not part of that.
That's why a lot of people, you know, 95% of people, including Republicans, don't expect this absolute immunity argument to prevail.
Exactly. Not to mention, like I said, the court can have absurd results. You know, they just can't.
Because if you're doing that, then you're empowering Biden right now as the president.
Everybody's son.
You know what I'm saying? And you can't run a race. So we're going to come back to that in a little bit. We got Ron Phillips here in the studio from the Waste Management Authority, and I want you to be a part of the discussion as well, Dwayne, because you and I had a conversation about what was going on in Lower Christiansted. We'll get to that in a little bit. But Ron,
and he was there. He was there.
I thought Ron was there to chime in and the Fitzgerald case.
No. He could have done that, but he don't really have the authority to do that this morning. So I really trying to get you in trouble. You know what I'm saying? So, good morning, Ron Phillips. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad to be back again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the council was with us when we were doing the sewer line work in the intersection of Water Gush Street and Market Street, and they had a storm drain culvert that was there, and he was able to see the condition that the culvert was in.
No.
Very revealing.
No. Okay. So Market Street is when you go over the hill there by Boys Club, by the avis,
yes,
and come down to the gut.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
And I got a question to ask you, Neville.
Mm-hmm.
Market Street is where the intersection everybody knows at Times Square.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you're going south, what street does it end at? Because when you're going south, you're going up and
east. It ends on East Street.
Yeah, East Street.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
He tried to test me.
Okay. Then.
Telling you, you grew up in Tongue
Bay. Okay. If that's the case. There's a Seventh-day Adventist church.
Of course.
Okay, what intersection is that located on?
Actually, the Seventh-day Adventist church is on Fisher Street, on the corner of Fisher Street and Queen Cross Street.
That's right. You're right.
Even Glenroy there behind there, behind the board, knowing that Christian said is like the back of your hand, you know what I'm saying? So that's good. Now, a lot of work is being done, right? What's the focus? Have we laid all the pipes? And now
let me give you some data. Yeah. Right now, as of yesterday, we installed 23,586 linear feet of 8-inch sewer pipe PVC,
mm-hmm.
and right now we're actually working on King Street, which is the last street we decided to work on. The reason why is that when you reach the market and King Street.
Mm-hmm.
by Times Square, and you're actually going on to Prince Street, where Chuck Knight them
yeah,
to be.
Yeah.
They have two sewer lines. One sewer line is under the sidewalk, and then they have the sewer line in the middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have to do, we have to rip out the entire sidewalk, and that's what we're doing. And That's on the left-hand side, and that's the part that's going to take some time. What they did is that they run a new sewer line, but for some reason, the sewer line that actually brings the sewage from buildings, we refer to as a lateral.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of running the laterals... Instead of actually running the laterals into the new sewer line, they just left it into the old one. And the old one is made out of clay. And so, therefore, all you have to do is you have to just replace it. So, unfortunately...
The sidewalk gone.
And then what we have to do, then we have to dig up the middle of the road. So what we decided to do now is to do the sidewalk first. Go ahead and restore that, and then go back and dig the middle of the road. So King Street in that section is going to be two excavation going to be done. I know it's going to be a pain.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the timeline for?
Right now, what we're doing is that we know that St. Patrick Parade is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to try to do is do the sidewalk first, and then we have to make a decision. The sidewalk might be finished by Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to make a decision whether we want to do the middle of the road. Because if you do the middle of the road, you have to make sure that the whole thing is, that entire section is done and have it ready for the St. Patrick Day Parade.
So are you going to dig up that sidewalk? But then nobody's going to be allowed to walk on the sidewalk.
No, you're going to be able to walk on the sidewalk.
Because they got to be rebuilt.
It has to be rebuilt because right now you have the excavated material.
Rebuilt.
Rebuilt.
Built.
Rebuilt.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to say, Neville, one time Christian said we're looking horrible. And mm-hmm. we have to admit that. Really, really bad. So finally, we went ahead and restored the roads and what we call asphalt restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is a representative from the U.S. EPA, which is actually the entity that's funding the project. The project is close to $10 million now.
Mm-hmm.
And that individual asked me, well, how come y'all ain't paving the entire road? And I said, well, you know, according to the EPA, EPA is saying that the asphalt restoration could be based on how wide the trench is. Then Public Works went ahead and give us a new excavation permit guideline. And their guideline said that if you actually dig 2 feet, that means you got to pave one lane. And if your sewer line is in the middle, you got to pave the entire road. So mm-hmm. the EPA is saying that Public Works guideline supersedes theirs. And so we're in discussion with them now. So hopefully we can come back.
So EPA saying, yeah, now we run things.
Yeah, exactly. No. They said Public Works run to make a Public Works got to give you the permit.
Yeah.
To do the excavation.
Yeah.
And so Public Work is saying if you excavate in a lane,
mm-hmm.
you gotta do half of the lane. If your sewer line is in the middle of the road, you gotta do the whole lane.
Okay.
So what happened now? Hopefully what will happen, they'll come back and give us the money, and then we go back and repave the roads. I mean, Christian said that where we had the where we did the excavation. All we did was just the asphalt restoration for the trenches that we dug.
Mm-hmm.
But in some areas, it was so bad, we had to go wider. Like, for instance, if you drive out of Christian said recently, coming out on Strand Street, and you come along on Prince Street, and you go down to Water God,
mm-hmm.
that section there, we had to do the whole thing because it was just crumbling.
Yeah. Dwayne, any questions?
No, I saw Mr. Phillips the other day. I didn't see him in a while, but we didn't get a chance to talk. But the sidewalk, you're going to dig up the sidewalk. You said, what street is that now? Fisher Street you're going
to
be at?
That's King Street. King Street.
From Market head down to Prince.
Prince to Prince, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, because I had to start about Prince. That won't affect me because I have to walk to government house and the lieutenant governor office. Okay, that's all God, man.
Yeah.
I can handle that.
No.
I know that's going to be a while before that gets replaced.
Because that's going to require a whole reconstruction of the sidewalk.
The whole thing, because
and it's not flat.
No, it's not.
It's a decline.
Exactly.
It's a decline that goes into an incline.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, when you look at it, you know what I'm saying?
And that section there, you got quite a few businesses.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, it's
wow.
It is rough. That's the reason why we left it to be the last road.
Yeah, okay. No, I want to go back to something you said earlier.
Sure.
And I'm sure Dwayne and the audience would appreciate this.
Sure.
What kind of pipe you took out and replaced with PVC pipe?
Okay. Ooh. In Christiansted, we took out concrete, we took out cast iron, ductile iron, we took out clay. Right now on King Street, all our blood. Pipe is clay, and the clay is cracking. The pipe, as we touch it, it's just falling apart.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
So when are you being up there on Queen Cross Street by Seventh-day Adventist, coming down from Canegata them to head down towards the casino? That's what King Cross. That's what Queen Cross is.
Yeah, that's right? Queen Cross. Yeah.
Canegata, the top of the hill.
All the way down to the boardwalk by the casino.
The boardwalk.
Exactly.
That was all what. That was our cast iron?
No, that there, all our line there was mostly concrete.
Concrete. Wow.
Yep.
So that's what, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s?
Well, I spoke to King Darby because he worked there for 42 years. And he said that those lines were installed like in probably the late 50s, early 60s.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Concrete line or so, no?
Concrete, that's right.
Wow.
And then also...
And then the 70s and 80s, that's when we went to cast iron?
They went to cast iron, yep.
So they held up okay then?
The problem is that the lines they're brittle, and eventually you actually get... When you have a lot of rain, you get a lot of what we call infiltration, and then it overwhelms the sewer system. As a matter of fact, when we got a lot of rain, you start seeing manholes and bubbling up.
Yeah. That's the aspect there.
Yeah.
So now we're putting in the most up-to-date PVC?
Yeah, which is referred to as SDR-35 PVC. These lines are designed strictly for sewer.
Where in America these lines? They're all over in the major cities?
All over in the major cities.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. We'll take a break, come back, talk about this some more. I also want to talk about what you know for St. Thomas and St. John.
Okay.
Because it's a territory-wide thing that's going
on
right now. We'll take a break. Ron Phillips joining us on the Bush Tea discussion here, giving us an update as to what's going on. We also find out what's going on in Fredericton. So we got Charlotte Amali, Christiansted, Frederickstead, and if you got Walking Cruise Bay, see if you could text somebody to find out as well. Be back right after this.
Don't tell me we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
UVI's annual Friendraiser Afternoon on the Green is back on Sunday, March 17th from noon to 5 p.m. on the UVI Golf Course on St. Thomas. Enjoy mouthwatering dishes, music by RVP Band and Shaw HP, plus face painting and bouncy houses for the kids. Register online for the best dress and hat competition. Visit aog.uvi.edu. Sponsored by VIA, VI Council on the Arts, Hogland VI, and First Bank.
Meet six extraordinary women who forged their own answers to a profound question.
As a Black woman, how does it feel to be free?
Lena Horne, Abby Lincoln.
They blaze such a trail.
Nina Simone.
Voice of the civil rights movement.
Cicely Tyson.
Accepted for her talent alone.
Diane Carroll.
We're at a new crossroad.
Pam Grier.
First female action hero in American film.
Look for How It Feels to Be Free.
We'll see what happens here.
On American Masters.
Tune in March 9th at 8 p.m. on WTJX TV Channel 12.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here on Analysis. We got Ron Phillips joining the Bush Tea discussion to talk about some of the infrastructure developments as relates to what is a territory-wide replacement of a lot of pipes and all that stuff. Good morning, Ron. Glad to have you here in the studio. And also, Dwayne Henry joining me on the line. Ron, the Waste Management Authority Executive Director, that's his title, right, or CEO?
Who?
Merritt.
He's the executive director.
Executive director. Yeah, he came here and he told us that in addition to the $8 billion, we were looking at an additional $3 to $4 billion to redo our sewer system and all that stuff territory-wide, right? That's okay now, right? Mm-hmm. Is this a part of the project or this is separate?
Yeah, separate. What happened typically is that in the past, well, currently it continues that we get, between us and WAPA, we actually get funding for wastewater and clean water. Mm-hmm. And then from time to time, what you see the Waste Management Authority and the Virgin Water and Power Authority, what they do, they will say, okay, we're going to be replacing water line and sewer line in certain areas. And those are given on an annual basis. But what happened, what FEMA is doing now, is FEMA comes and they do an analysis with the assistant with a brand, and they look at the system and they say, hey, at the rate that y'all are going, just getting a piece of money every year is not going to work. And so FEMA said, the thing you need to do is to replace the entire system. And that's what they call prudent replacement. In St. Croix, prudent replacement has been approved. And right now, St. Croix is going to be going through the process of actually getting what we call engineering and architectural done. Right now, we're starting on what we refer to as the LBJ sewer shed, which starts from all the way from St. Croix by the sea, come up by Pelican Cove or the Palms, and then it comes by what we call Condo Road, which is Mill Harbor, Canley Grove, and so forth like that.
Club St. Croix.
Club St. Croix and all of those. And then you also have a certain section of where we at in Richmond and all of the surrounding area. So right now, a contract is going to be issued to a company known as EDT, and they're going to do the engineering and design for that entire sewer shed.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of the prudent replacement. The next RFP that we have out now is actually Mumbijou. And Mumbijou, if you ever been in Mumbijou, if anybody ever been in Mumbijou, Mumbijou is a nightmare.
Inaccessible,
exactly.
And he's being modest when he used the term nightmare, because I went to pick up one of my classmates, them who actually relocate back home and doing some work in St. Thomas to drop you to the airport. When you get to where Loma Linda was, you got to come to a full stop, man.
You're thinking easy, though.
Yeah, you got to come to a full stop
because the road was dug up. I go speak perfect English here. The road was dug up, but even before you get to that, when you leave the intersection by Woodson,
yeah,
mm-hmm. you got to drive on both sides of the road,
yeah,
because that's unfortunate.
And that area is heavily traveled. There's a lot of traffic there, a lot of traffic there because you have the money.
You got
the
frangipani gut.
You got a frangipani gut too.
That are run down all the way down to I would call it Baron's Castle.
Yeah, Baron's Castle.
Right, all exactly. the way down there. So,
The RFP is up for Mama Jo, and then what we're doing, we're combining what we call Fredrickstead, which is actually around where the legislature building used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That area is referred to as Lagoon.
Another got area as well.
Another got area, and then there's another section when you're going on to the pool. By where Sandcastle is located.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have another sewer shed there. We refer to that as Bay Road.
How much sewer shed we got in Highland?
Well, we got 16.
Okay.
We got 16. The furthest one east is actually Pearl B. Larson.
Okay.
Pearl B. Larson. And then in Christiansted, there's two of them. You have what we call Old Barachia, which a lot of people really don't know.
That's up there by education.
By education, yeah. Exactly. And then you have the one by Gallus Bay. Everyone knows that because once you're going up there, you could see it.
Yeah.
So, what the plan is to combine all of those into one sewer shed when you're actually going to do the design and engineering. The reason why we want to do the design and engineering level because some of these sewer line runs into bushes.
Yeah.
And the problem when you run into bushes, the bushes are mistake. Like right now we have an issue in Port Authority where we have a major sewer line that crosses the airport going north to south, and we have a sewer line going from east to west.
Not to south.
Not to south. And the runway. We have a sewer line actually going underneath the runway.
That's how they're
going
to actually. Underneath the runway?
Underneath the runway. And that's going from north to south.
And that'll go to the
treatment plant.
To treatment
plant. And it's actually on the south side of the road that goes down to Infield Green.
Yeah.
But this is way in the bushes.
Wow.
The bushes. And the thing about it is that if you have any problem with that line, we don't know anything about it until somebody come and tell us.
Yeah.
So part of prudent replacement, what we want to do is to bring those lines on the road. So if we have a problem, we could identify it away.
What's the deal with Savan? The Savan got.
Savan got.
Everybody know about the Savan got.
Yeah, what they did is that they did some work in Savan got, but Whit O'Brien is working with Waste Management in St. Thomas, developing what we call the scope of work and the cost estimate for prudent replacement. And then once you finish doing that, then you present it to FEMA. And then FEMA does their own, and it's a process you go through with FEMA. So the whole idea is to do prudent replacement for both St. Thomas and St. John, because it's one district combined.
And what about Cruz Bay?
Cruz Bay is going to be included as that.
Part of St. Thomas and St. John thing.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question. I know, Dwayne, you're going to like this question. We ain't got no local with O'Brien and the Virgin Islands, man? shouldn't companies be looking at the idea of being a local with O'Brien? And this isn't just limited to the Virgin Islands.
But
I would think every municipality, every city should want to have a Whit O'Brien, because it looked like Whit O'Brien just sitting down doing and the audience and run, waiting to hear people need to recover so that they can come in and say, I got this skill.
But that's what they do. They are recovery specialists.
And what
Whit O'Brien has done, Neville, you won't believe it. Ali went ahead and just get the various expertise and put them together. And something what they end up doing is that they will actually go out and actually get consulting company to assist them. That's how.
That's what I'm saying, man. Yeah, it looked like the Whit O'Briens and the Ernst and Youngs of the world. They've been here since late 17, and they're
gonna be here for a while.
And they're sending their children to the best private schools because they know they got contract left and right. Like we just said, knocking dog. In the Virgin Islands, man. Oh gosh, man.
I got three things. First of all, Ran.
Yeah.
He cannot pay his name Frangipani. In fact, that's Kenan God.
Well, let me put it this way. Nobody know nothing about Kenan God. If you tell anybody Kenan God, they want to know what you're talking about.
You're right.
You know, my family is from back then. John Mutter wrote a book called The Disaster Profiteers. How natural disasters make the rich richer and the poor poor. And it speaks about these companies that's all they do is go wrong. And they're ingrained with FEMA. You know, FEMA, they actually kind of like preferred people. When you have FEMA, you know, if you have a natural disaster, FEMA will actually say, well, you know, these are some companies that can help you navigate the process, especially if you're a small jurisdiction and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But And the third thing is, we have a one woman, I can't even count her name, and she's listening, she's going to know who I'm talking about. Who is this? She could be the cushion with O'Brien, but she needs more help. But she does have a small consulting
I know who you're talking about. We'll back off with the name until she's comfortable with us broadcasting it here on the radio.
That's
what I'm saying. And it's the same thing.
Highly competent.
Of course, but doing it's the same thing with when we used to hear about us having to go to these band councils where we have more than enough local
attorneys,
legal
and
expertise.
It's not that difficult, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like band council. It's yeah. complicated thing.
And maybe the government, right? Maybe Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood, right?
Man, it's a racket.
They know, and they're good at what they do. Mm-hmm. I'm not knocking their ability. Sure. Right. All I'm saying is we have it here as well. And maybe the government need to encourage a syndicate approach or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Where firms would come together. Right. Whether mm-hmm. it be in the engineering side, like what we're talking about with waste management, mm-hmm. Legal firms. Yeah. Legal firms would come together and we could form a Virgin Islands band council consortium, whatever the term is, right? Mm-hmm. So that the money could stay here because we know the people them live here, man.
Yeah. Well, I got a statement to make, and yeah. the individual thing of mine, me using his name, mm-hmm. Dennis Brown, former commissioner for public work.
Yeah, assistant commissioner.
For public work. He went ahead and actually put a team of individuals to do engineering work. Mm-hmm. And he actually went ahead and bid for
the Canaan God, according to
him. But he put in a bid for that, what we refer to as Mambiju Sewer Shed. He also, his team then put in a bid for the LBJ Sewer Shed. Mm-hmm. And you won't believe it. In the evaluation process, the difference between the company we give the contract to and Browse firm, Browse Consortium, was 2 points.
Wow. But let me ask a question. These projects seem big enough that both could get a piece of the pie? These two in particular, in general, that multiple entities could play a part in this thing?
Well, let's say that, and that is the approach that Waste Manning wants to take. But at the same time, recently, the executive branch wants to take a different approach because what they want to do is to bundle it into $1 billion package. Mm-hmm. So what you do, once you bundle it like that means you give it to one firm, and the firm could decide whether they want to sub it out.
To subcontract. Now, North Shore Road and St. Croix, that's not a sewer line.
Yes, it is. Yeah? As a matter of fact, remember North Shore Line?
To go from where to where? Because in the 2+2 area down there by Najee, what they need down there?
Okay, that's an issue that's been coming up.
Quality grocer.
That is something that's coming up, and that's something that we're going to look at in the LBJ sewer shed, because you have sewer line right on the intersection over by where Times Square, where Five Corners is located.
But that's because you walk through the back part of La Grande Princesse.
Exactly. But at the same time, you could actually run a sewer line right from the time you leave where the National Guard used to be there, that commercial complex.
You
could run a sewer line from there all the way down until you get as far as maybe where Chocolate is at.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can pick up all that commercial activity, and then you from when you have Chocolate.
But is that in the long term plan?
Well, the thing about that's one of the things that we're gonna discuss, that we're gonna tell them to look at for when we're doing the LBJ sewer shed.
Okay. Good.
The thing about it is that because, like I said, it's been asked many times.
Now, back to St. Thomas.
Sure.
What about sewer lines to get towards the Bordeaux area going west and to Tutu going east?
Well, right now, I am not too familiar with all the details of St. Thomas, but every option that there is going to be explored and actually put on the table.
Both districts got the $1.5 to $2 billion?
No. Only one district got it so far.
So far.
Which is St. Croix.
Yeah.
So St. Thomas is in the process of going through the process that St. Croix had to go through.
St. Croix is complete.
Some pinkrai is complete right now.
Monies have been set aside.
Money has been set aside, and based on what I heard is that the money gonna start flowing July 1st.
Okay. So right now, this, for St. Thomas, St. John, they're in the process. There is no finality like there is for St. Croix.
No, there's no finality because you go through multiple stages. Yeah. That's the process that FEMA has.
But wasn't there a commitment? A commitment to do so, is it about eligibility?
No, they're eligible. The eligibility issue is settled.
Okay.
But what they do is there's a part where you call due diligence, mm-hmm. and so to the due diligence is you part of the due diligence process. You got to decide how much sewer lines you have, mm-hmm. what the sewer you have. First, you got to break up the area into sewer shed.
Yeah.
And then once you break it up into sewer shed, then you got to let them know how much manholes you have, how many linear feet as sewer line. Then you identify the type of material that you have there. But the unfortunate thing, Neville, is that when we're talking about replacing the underground infrastructure, you're talking about waste management, you're talking about WAPA.
Public Works.
But and so what happened is that we're going to be digging up the roads. We're going to be doing excavation. So this is going to be a way of life for the next 10, 15 years.
And what Frederick said saying. Downtown Christian.
Well, the downtown Freddy said we're gonna do the same thing like what we did in Christian said, and downtown Freddy said a lot of the roads then got paved.
Yeah.
And so you have to dig them up.
Wow. Man.
And
no, it's your fault. No, but that's the justification for the one dig approach, right? Because when you're digging to put in new infrastructure, you would want to pave so that you don't pave before and then got to repave again.
But see, the one dig approach could only work if everybody got the money at the same time. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't happen.
So who can we reach out to find out about more specifics for St. Thomas and St. John?
St. John, you could reach out to a gentleman named Alex Bruni.
Bruni?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm finding out what's going on. So they're eligible. It's just now about doing all the administrative paperwork.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, FEMA has like they go from
and this ain't part of the original $8 billion. This is
this is all separate.
Okay,
this is all separate.
Okay, good. So that's what the governor talking about when the number is now at 15. Then
all separate.
Okay,
it's all separate. And the thing about it also, WAPA is going through the same process also. Because WAPA, what WAPA is going to be able to do for the water line, they're talking replacing the entire WAPA system, but not inside. The thing with WAPA is that they also looking at their pump stations.
Yeah.
Because people don't, I myself didn't realize that WAPA had a pump station up on the hill by Contentment.
Okay, I
didn't realize that. And that pump station is what pumped all the water down to the green tank that's located at Central High School.
We found that out after the hurricane.
Yeah, and to me, when I look at that pump station looks small.
Yeah, man, yeah, very small.
Very small.
Thanks a lot for coming in at short notice. I appreciate that. Dwayne, thanks a lot for educating me. What a god name?
I am gonna ask my historian if he's familiar with that.
He's going to Dolby.
That got to run through my family property, you know.
You got it. Yeah. Alrighty. Take care. Talk to you guys. We'll be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.